Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. The first article is Weathering in Batches. Get realistic results using these easy-to-follow techniques, by Dave Abellas, photos by the author. Rapido Trains Incorporated recently released its first run of the General Electric C30-7 diesel locomotive in HO scale. The full-size six-axle engine was a common prototype from 1977 through the early part of the 21st century. The model is a welcome addition to the high-end digital command control-equipped locomotive market. I needed examples of these units to fill a gap in the roster of my Conrail Onondaga cutoff or OC layout. I ordered two of the six-axle locomotives decorated for Conrail. The paint on the Rapido models is well done, representing units as they appeared when they arrived on the property in 1977. These were some of the first locomotives ordered new by Conrail. However, for my layout, the fresh paint wouldn't look appropriate. Why? Because the Onondaga cutoff is set in 1994. That means the paint on the newest Conrail C30-7s had endured more than 15 years of hard labor. A decade and a half is a long time for locomotives that run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, through hot summer days and frigid winter nights. In the 1990s, full-size Conrail's locomotives were well maintained. However, faded paint, road grime, and rust were evident. Recreating those elements offered a way to tell a visual story of two similar, but different, examples of Conrail C30-7 diesels during that time. Instead of weathering the two units separately, I worked on them at the same time, a process I called batch weathering. In addition to locomotives, this technique can be used for rolling stock, structures, vehicles, and even figures. It's an enjoyable process and an effective way to take a pair, or larger group, of similar models and give them subtle differences that help tell your layout story. Follow along as I share how I batch weathered two Conrail C30-7 diesels for my Onondaga cutoff layout. Getting started. Unboxing new locomotives is always exciting, especially these days when the detail parts have already been added and the warning labels and other small items come factory applied. When I get new models, I enjoy making a builder's photo to document the experience, much like prototype locomotive manufacturers do. I posed Conrail C30-7 diesels 6600 and 6608 next to Onondaga Yard on my layout. See Figure 1. This also provided a perfect opportunity to test run both units and take care of any decoder programming. After I'd programmed both diesels and checked to make sure there were no factory defects, it was time for the creative fun to begin. I laid paper towels on the workbench to catch errant details as well as any excess weathering products during this multi-step process, see Figure 2. In addition to preparing the workspace, it's also a good idea to gently clean models prior to weathering. Dust, skin oils, and other impurities may affect how washes, paint, and weathering powders adhere to a model. A cloth and 70% isopropyl alcohol is one common method for cleaning models. However, it's a good idea to test any cleaning products on an inconspicuous spot to make sure they don't remove the paint or printing. Once the models are clean, only handle them while wearing powder-free nitrile or latex gloves. Adding depth. Great weathering jobs often take time and are built up in layers with different techniques to capture the look of the prototype. And as you can see here, you don't have to spend hours taking the model apart to get realistic results. For the Rapido's GE C30-7 diesels, I began with several shades of brown and gray Tamiya panel line accent color, see figure 1. Use this product in a well-ventilated area and follow all manufacturer-recommended safety practices. I used the factory-diluted enamel paints to highlight doors and seams on the long hood to match prototype photos of the 6-axle road units. Battery box doors are another common area for rust to accumulate. I applied more grit and rust to the 6600 than the 6608. I turned to the black panel line in areas that required dark contrast, such as the radiator grills, see image 2, as well as areas near the exhaust stack on the top of the long hood. A nice feature of the Tamiya product is the paint is extra thin and capillary action pulls it into the molded lines. This helps to simulate the buildup of grime in the depths of the protected areas, such as seams in the car body and door seals. The radiator cores were another area that benefited from some black panel line. Rapido did a beautiful job with the see-through grating that's glued in place. Rather than risk damage to the delicate etched metal parts, I applied panel line into the holes and let it run down to the cores below, see figure 3. I wiped off any excess with a paper towel, leaving the thinned paint only in the radiator cores. Flat finish. With the Tamiya panel line in place, I moved to the next step, applying a clear flat finish. To prevent the cab window glazing and headlights from getting a frosted finish, I covered these locations with a mix of masking and painter's tape, see figure 1. I cut the tape to fit each location. The tape can be left in place for several days while the subsequent weathering products are applied. A clear flat finish is an important step in the weathering process. I prefer to apply it after the base coats of Tamiya panel line accent color are in place, but before adding more effects with an airbrush and weathering powders. The Rapido paint is compatible with Tamiya TS-80 Flat Clear in image 2. I applied the flat coat to the models in a vented spray booth. Location-specific effects. Locomotives have different mandated maintenance cycles and receive upgrades at various times. Items that wear out, such as brake shoes, hoses, bearings, and pedestal liners, the plates lining the brackets on each truck side frame that hold the bearings and axles in place, often get replaced when a locomotive is shopped for inspections. Pedestal liners are manufactured by different vendors and are supplied in different colors. Painting them suggests a locomotive was recently shopped. I used a brush and polyscale foliage green to capture the look of replaced liners on the 6600. See figure 1. I left the liners on the 6608 in original black. It doesn't take long for the exhaust stack area on diesel locomotives to become filthy. Additional weathering can be applied as the process continues. Note how the panel line helps define the doors and details, and how deep the radiator cores look after the flat clear was applied in figure 2. Extra panel line can be added to areas that need more definition, see figure 3. Excess can be wiped off when wet with a paper towel. Airbrush weathering. I headed back to the spray booth for the next weathering layer, this time applied with an airbrush. I used flat white paint thinned 5:1 as a fade coat. This helps take away the fresh look of the factory paint. I used sienna thinned 4:1 to add grime to the underframe, see figure 1. Weathering the two units coat by coat, one after the other, let me compare the overall look of both models. You can see my goal of having the 6600 look a bit worse for wear is well underway in figure 2. I wanted the 6608 to be a bit more faded compared to the 6600. This was a simple task of adding one more fade coat. I let both models dry overnight. The next day, I placed the C30-7 diesels side by side for another comparison. Note how the fade coat smoothed out some of the weathering colors while drawing detail out on the factory painted shell and frame in Figure 3. A potpourri of techniques. Satisfied with how the fade and grime looked, it was time to add character to each model with pigments and weathering powders. I used a mix of ammo by MIG pigments and washes, along with powders from Bragdon Enterprises, see Figure 1, on the Conrail C30-7 diesel locomotives. Different brushes help with different applications. I used a stiffer brush to apply colors that appeared to be ground into the paint, like the soot around the exhaust stack in Figure 2. Softer brushes are better suited for adding dust and prototypical highlights. I turned to AK Interactive weathering paint markers to add rust detail to the battery box doors and other locations prone to corrosion. I started with darker marks and used my finger to pull the drying paint down in a vertical motion, see Figure 3. I used lighter colors sparingly to represent fresh rust spots. Don't overlook the walkways when weathering diesels. I used dark dust powders to highlight the walkways and MIG dark steel powder to simulate areas where the paint has worn away on the tread plate under foot traffic and heavy use, see Figure 4. Finishing touches. With the bulk of the weathering completed, I used tweezers to remove the masking tape from the windows and headlights, see Figure 1. This is the highlight of any weathering job. The contrast between the clean areas and the dirt and grime on the rest of the model is great. I cut the masks for the front windows with curves to match the profile of the wipers. After I removed the tape, the glazing and the path of the wipers was clean, while the edges were dirty, see Figure 2. This suggests a hard-working locomotive that's earning its keep. A few final steps brought these weathering projects to the finish line. I applied different amounts of MIG Fresh Engine Oil, an oil-based paint that dries shiny to look like spilled fuel. I applied a touch of this product to the gauges, fillers, and levels. I used a fine micro brush to apply a few streaks of Fresh Engine Oil down the sides of the tank, see Figure 3. Finally, I painted the blackened metal wheels. With the layout power on, I advanced the throttle while holding the locomotive in place. As the wheels were spinning, I used another fine micro brush to apply rusty brown paint in Figure 4. Then I cleaned the wheel treads with mineral spirits. With that, Conrail 6600 and 6608 were ready to enter service. Batch weathering gives models a similar, yet different, appearance, just like the prototypes. The next article is The Journey of Colorado and Southern Extra 69 East by Doug Tagsold, photos by Craig Wilson. Timetable and train order operation doesn't have to be as difficult as it seems. Though many model railroaders are interested in operating their model railroads, some feel learning the rules for timetable and train order, or TTTO, operation is too difficult. Indeed, it can be intimidating, as it was for me. However, I learned that by taking it little by little, one step at a time, my operating crew and I were soon able to understand the basics of it, and were soon having fun with TTTO operation on my Colorado and Southern layout. As numerous operating sessions went by, we began learning the finer points of the operation and the operating rules that go with it. But to first get started, let's keep it simple. Just remember that first-class trains are superior to second-class trains, second-class trains are superior to third-class trains, and all of those trains are superior to extra trains. First, second, and third-class trains, if there were any, will be listed on a timetable. The timetable states where each of those superior trains should be throughout their run across the railroad. They might get late, but by rule, they can never leave a station earlier than the time listed on the timetable. If they do fall behind their schedule, an extra train must still wait for them. Only an order from the dispatcher can relieve extras from their responsibility to wait. Editor's note: the same goes for other inferior trains. End note. extra trains are not listed on the timetable, so it is up to their crews to determine when they can safely move onto the main line while still keeping clear of the superior trains listed on the timetable. That is where the challenge and fun of TTTO operations begin. So, let's climb aboard Extra 69 East as it makes its eastward journey from Silver Plume to Denver. Imagine it's a mild August morning in 1925 as we get to climb aboard Colorado and Southern 280 Steam Locomotive No. 69 at Silver Plume and ride it east to South Denver. Engineer T.J. Stratton and conductor Craig Wilson are the crew on duty today, called to run our ore extra east to South Denver. Let's go meet them at the Silver Plume Roundhouse. On duty at 7 a.m., Engineer Stratton backs number 69 out of the Silver Plume Roundhouse, see figure 1. The first work of the day is to pick up three gondolas loaded with low-grade gold ore at the Burley Mine in Silver Plume. The crew then reviews the orders they received from the Silver Plume station agent. The order reads, to, quote, C&E Engine 69 at Silver Plume, end quote, quote, Engine 69 run extra Silver Plume to South Denver, end quote. With a quick glance at the timetable, the crew sees they have three superior westbound trains to watch out for on their eastward trip to South Denver this morning. Train number 101 leaves Denver Yard at 7:45 a.m., and number 103 leaves South Denver Yard at 8:55 a.m. Both are second-class freights, one to Silver Plume and the other to Black Hawk. The third train, number 51, is a first-class passenger train from Denver Union Station to Silver Plume, departing at 11:45 a.m. The crew of C&S number 69 did not receive orders to meet any westbound extra trains, so unless they receive any additional orders down the road, they will only have to meet these three superior trains listed on the timetable. Finished with their work at Silver Plume at 7:45 a.m., Conductor Wilson looks at the timetable and sees it will be several hours before any of the superior trains will be getting close, so he instructs Engineer Stratton to, quote-unquote, highball east toward Denver. Extra 69 East crosses over the Devil's Gate Viaduct and around the famous Georgetown Loop between Silver Plume and Georgetown. At 8:05 a.m., our train passes through Georgetown, see Figure 2. The station order board displays, quote-unquote, clear, meaning there are no new orders to pick up. With no work to do in Georgetown, and still several hours before westbound train number 101 will be due, Conductor Wilson gives Engineer Stratton the signal to, quote-unquote, highball yet again. Extra 69 East arrives in Idaho Springs at 8:15 a.m., figure 3 opposite, and begins its work there, picking up three additional ore loads at the Argo Tunnel loadout, see figure 4, next page. After completing the work, Conductor Wilson checks his watch and the timetable. It is now 8:50 a.m. He sees that the running times from Idaho Springs to the next passing siding at Floyd Hill is 20 minutes, based on the running times of the scheduled trains, and he also sees that train number 101 is due at Floyd Hill at 9:30 a.m. Rules require that an inferior train, such as Extra 69 East, must be in the clear 5 minutes ahead of the time of an opposing superior train. So by those calculations, if they leave now, Extra 69 East should arrive at Floyd Hill at 9:10 a.m. That gives them plenty of time to pull into the siding before the arrival on number 101 at 9:30. Conductor Wilson gives the signal to highball. Between Idaho Springs and Floyd Hill, our train continues eastward. A light snowfall the night before has left this portion of Clear Creek Canyon decorated with a light dusting of snow. Extra 69 East is waiting in the siding at Floyd Hill as number 101 passes by on the main line, right on time at 9:30 a.m. Before Extra 69 East leaves, Conductor Wilson checks the timetable to see how they stand against the other two morning trains out of Denver, Number 103 is due into Forks Creek at 10:15 a.m., and passenger train number 51 isn't due to leave Denver until 11:45 a.m. Highball. Extra 69 East arrives at Forks Creek at 9:50 a.m. See Figure 5 previous. The timetable shows number 103 due out of Big Hill at 10:05 a.m. Wilson determines that with the 10 minutes running time from Forks Creek to Big Hill, and the rule for an inferior train to be in the clear 5 minutes prior to the superior train's time, we should not try to run to Big Hill now. Instead, he has our train to pull into the siding here at Forks Creek and wait for the arrival of number 103. At 10:15, there is no sign of train number 103. But because it's the superior train, Extra 69 East must continue to wait. Finally, number 103 arrives and passes our waiting train at 10:35 a.m. No problem, we still have plenty of time to move eastward. The next train we have to meet, number 51, doesn't leave Denver for another hour yet. Highball! It's a slow descent down the 2% grade in Clear Creek Canyon between Big Hill and Golden. A light application of air to the brakes is required to keep our heavy train of ore under control. See Figure 6. Extra 69 East rolls through Golden at 11:10 a.m. See Figure 7. Conductor Wilson starts to figure out where to meet number 51. He figures that, barring any unexpected delays, our train should pass through Arvada at 11:20 a.m., Wheat Ridge at 11:35 a.m., and make it to C&S Junction at 11:45 a.m., 10 minutes before number 51 is due there. He signals Engineer Stratton to proceed. Wilson says he will check our time when we get to Wheat Ridge. He figures as long as we're through there before 11:40, we can make it to C&S Junction in time. If not, we can always wait in the siding at Wheat Ridge to meet number 51. With no unexpected delays, Extra 69 East arrives in the siding at C&S Junction just as expected at 11:45 a.m. A less experienced conductor may have decided to have their train wait at Wheat Ridge, and that would have been fine. But the crack crew of Wilson and Stratton have made this trip over the line many times before, and they know well the capabilities of C&S 280 number 69. Their decision to proceed was never in doubt. Train number 51 passes by on the main line right on time at 11:55 a.m., see Figure 8. Once number 51 is cleared, Extra 69 East continues east to South Denver. At 12:15 p.m., engine number 69 delivers its train of ore loads to the Grant Smelter in South Denver, Figure 9 opposite. The crew will then take the engine to the roundhouse for servicing and inspection. Engineer Stratton and Conductor Wilson will quote-unquote go for beans or lunch, returning later to build their return train of empty ore cars to deliver to the mines on their way back to Silver Plume later this afternoon. On their way back, they will need to decide where to meet the same superior trains that they met this morning, as those trains will be returning back to Denver in the afternoon as trains number 102, 104, and 52. When I host operating sessions with fewer than a full complement of crew members, which is probably half of the time, we run without a dispatcher. The story above, the journey of Extra 69 East, was actually run without a dispatcher. We either just pretend that we have actual running orders and clearances, or I can make them up ahead of time. All that is needed is a timetable and a clock. Many of these sessions without a dispatcher run more smoothly than the ones where we do have one. My suggestion for a layout with operators new to TTTO operation is to start out slowly without all of the paperwork and a dispatcher, and run a fairly simple session with just the clock and a timetable. Perhaps have all trains running in one direction be scheduled on the timetable, and have all of the opposing direction trains run as extras. Let the extra train crews figure out their meets, just as Extra 69 East did. With this simple approach, new operators may feel less intimidated and more willing to try TTTO operation. Of course, mistakes will be made, but you may be surprised at how quickly crew members catch on and find they like it. For another look at the journey of Extra 69 East and all of the other trains run during the operating session, search YouTube for, quote, Colorado and Southern Operating Session, end quote. Doug Tagsold is a regular contributor to Model Railroader and its special issues. His Colorado and Southern Clear Creek District was featured in Model Railroad Planning 2018. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader Magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@AfterSight.org. Thank you for listening.